Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Manchester United 0, Manchester City 2, and how many steps closer to retaining the title are they now? And it's Leroy Sané on as a substitute that has rattled it in. This counter-attack against Sterling involved, it was 3-on-3. He laid the ball off to Sonu, who had space on his left-hand side. Defensively, United may be caught out a bit, but Sané breaking into the penalty area, and the shot was sublime. De Gea got a hand onto it, maybe the power was too much.
It's the Premier League preview show for week 36 of the season. I'm Tom Rennie, and coming up, Manchester is blue once again, with City's win leaving United and Liverpool seeing red. Surely the title is now won. Plus, a derby for Tottenham's new ground, Cardiff on their second shot of Warnock whiskey in the Last Chance Saloon, and does anybody want to finish fourth? Our panel today, TalkSport's football editor David Walker, Daniel Gabbidon is here, former West Ham, Crystal Palace and Cardiff defender, and also Paul Parker is here too, former Manchester United and England fullback. If you're listening to this programme on a radio station, you can download an extended podcast, search for TalkSport Premier League Preview Show on Acast, iTunes, Spotify or any other good podcast provider. Hi panel, everybody okay? You're doing well?
Yeah.
I'm very good.
Good to see you all, looking very handsome. Ready for the big Man City title-winning parade in the next week or so?
I'm not having this.
You don't think?
Really? No, the title is not won.
Of course it's won.
No way.
Come on.
Why do you say this? Why are you so confident?
The next two games, they're difficult. They might not win both. They might not win both.
Right, let's get to it. Last night, as we record the programme, was Manchester City's big win in the derby over United. Next games for City, Burnley away, Leicester home, Brighton away. They are now top of the table. The game in hand has been won. Paul Parker, you were calling the game last night for TalkSport's international team. Dave says it's not won for you, is it?
No, it's not.
Why not?
For the simple reason is there's still three games to go. That's what it boils down to. They've got three teams to play each, and they've got to go out, and well, City have got to go out and win every single one, so it's not one. It's easy to presume that they're going to beat the Burnleys, whoever's left, but strange things have happened.
Absolutely.
And if we saw like these sides would be resilient, and you just might, it just might happen, they might get a bit of luck and hold out, or might go and nick a goal, and we know that.
Well, Brighton
City
can't have a shot, so Brighton don't shoot in games.
Right.
So we know they're not going to win that one.
Don't worry about Brighton. We'll worry about Burnley and Leicester, right? But Burnley...
Burnley already got 40 points. Sean Dyche was celebrating at Stamford Bridge on Monday like Mourinho at Anfield a few years ago. He thinks it's done. They've all gone.
Or let's all go.
He's already sent Dwight McNeil to Magaluf for two weeks, and why not?
We may as well wrap that bit up.
Can Liverpool win all their games as well? That's the other question you have to ask. They might slip up as well.
The thing about with that one, though, Dad, is that every time you look at Liverpool and you... Every time... I just think there's that little bit of strength in them. I think they can get over the line every game.
Yeah, seem to find
and defensively,
way,
they're not going to be caught out as many times as what City can be.
I think if this was La Liga or Serie A, you'd be saying that, look, the league is done. But I think with the Premier League, it probably is the most competitive league about, where, you know, everybody will tend to kind of have a go. So obviously Brighton, you know, they still need to pick up points. Burnley, yes, they're safe, but knowing Sean Dyche and how he is with his players, he's very intense, he'll keep them going to the end of the season, so that's going to be a difficult game as well. And obviously Leicester, on their day, are capable of beating anyone with a team that
well,
they are.
I tried to get me and Dave the next 2 weeks off, but it seems to want to work, so fine, we'll do another couple
Look,
of shows.
Wouldn't it just be apt if Brendan Rodgers Leicester were to cost Man City the title and hand it to Liverpool?
I mean,
after what happened a few years ago?
I mean, it's a lovely story, and that's why Dave's such a good journalist, because he's found that story from somewhere or other. But I am unfortunately a realist, and there's no scenario for me where it happens.
Of course. Now, you're absolutely correct to assume that Man City, if they play to their best of their ability, as they have done in recent weeks, they will win the league from this point. It's theirs to win. However, it's not completely home and dry. Burnley away is a difficult game. They only drew 1-1 at Burnley last year. And there's every chance that they could, you know, Burnley can make it difficult for them again.
Let's talk a bit about the football from the Wednesday night game in Old Trafford, because I thought it was very interesting that Man City in the first half were being held well by Manchester United. Then sometimes coaches are tactical geniuses. There's no doubt Guardiola is one of, if not the best currently working in the game. But Gabs, the reason for me that City won that game is Fernandinho got injured. Gundogan got moved because of that injury into midfield, and from that point, for about 15 minutes, I think he just ran the game. And he took that hard-working United midfield of Fred, who, to be fair, was City's best midfielder. The passes he picked out to some City players last night, fantastic. Sadly, he's a Man United player. But apart from that, you know, Gundogan just picked him and Pereira apart. And they were working very hard buzzing him around him. And, you know, even when things don't go Guardiola's way, they seem to have gone Guardiola's way.
Yeah, but I think, you know, the way that Man City play, I think Gary Neville kind of alluded to it after the game as well, they do just wear you down. You know, first half, United, it was almost like, you know, when you drop your kid off at nursery and maybe you're a little bit late and the kids have already gone out onto the play yard and they're all just flying around everywhere.
That's very personal story, this.
That's what it was like. It was like watching kids on the schoolyard just flying about. And I just thought to myself, there's no way that United can keep that up second half. And yes, they did have to show a reaction from the Everton game. So I think City are probably well aware the first kind of half an hour were going to be really important and they'd be flying at and pressing them. But I thought to myself, you know, with Ollie coming out after the Everton game saying they're not fit enough as well, I just thought they've thrown a lot of energy into that first half, and, you know, second half could be a totally different story. You mentioned kind of the tactical change, but I just thought United then second half just run out of steam, to be honest with you, and Man City's the football then was allowed to kind of take over, really.
I do want to talk about Man United, because there's a lot to talk about with Manchester United. But to round off on Manchester City, Paul, of course, you were calling the game last night. Bernardo Silva, fantastic. Leroy Sané coming off the bench and scoring an important goal for them. Were you impressed all told by Man City? Were there any negatives you could pick out? Any hope for Burnley this weekend, for Leicester coming up?
Well, the major hope for Burnley is that Man City play Vincent Kompany. If they play him, there's a chance for him, because if you can imagine their two big centre forward getting onto his shoulder and allowing him to have the ball, because how many times did we watch him give the ball away under no pressure, knocking poor balls. Poor Zinchenko, twice he nearly got beaten up because of him, balls put around his throat. Vincent Kompany is struggling.
He's a weak link now. Yeah.
He can't move now. You ask him to do anything quick and he really struggles to move his body. And I've been through that one at the back end of when I was playing. After having so many serious injuries, everything's there in your head. The problem is it's not transferring through your body and you just can't move things as quick as you want to. And he's had some horrendous injuries over the last 4 or 5 seasons and it's caught up with him. For me, this is his final season in a Man City shirt playing in the Premier League. I think it has to be.
And maybe no Kompany this weekend. You'd bring maybe Laporte and Stones together. Otamendi was on the bench.
Well, you look at Stones, he hasn't played a lot recently, has he? He's hardly played Stones. No, I don't know what's happened there with him. You look at Laporte is the one that he has to be in there. Otamendi is a liability in certain ways, but going back to where we almost started from, Burnley's a test. If Burnley go physical and get that ball to their front two as they go from back to front, it's going to cause a problem. Yeah. Dead balls are going to be a problem. They give away silly little fouls. Players fall down quite easy now, looking for those kind of fouls, as you kept alluding to all night, that everyone's out now, looking for that way.
The secret's out.
Yeah, technical fouls, we call them. So, on a pressure-wise, if Burnley start in the same fashion as what Manchester United try to start, Burnley have got a better way, they will last a lot longer than what Manchester United did, because they've got players who can do that week in, week out.
You heard after the game last night when Pep was speaking to the media and he said, look, you know, everyone thinks we're going to win the title now, we've beaten Manchester United, but no, because next we've got Burnley. He knows it's going to be tough.
He didn't celebrate wildly, did he? I was expecting there to be a, running towards the fans, hugging people. We've got the job done. Do you think if they win the game this weekend, they'll do it?
No, because they've already lost to Leicester this season, and they've got to play them afterwards. And any manager,
what if Huddersfield have won at Anfield on Friday?
You know, until you've done it, until you've actually won something or achieved something, when you've stayed up or won a title or qualified for something, you can't celebrate. You can't jinx it, can you? You've got to be professional, right?
Yeah, he's not that way, I don't think, Pep. He is quite emotional, he is intense, but he's not one to be running down the touchline with three games
not
left.
Not when it's this close.
Especially when they've just gone out of the Champions League as well, which is a big disappointment. So, you know, I think he kind of alluded to how important it was, that result kind of last night, to get over the disappointment of the Champions League as well and keep themselves in with a chance of winning the Premier League. So he's not that kind of person. He's very focused. And he takes each game kind of as it comes, really. Mm. So it's a difficult game. Sometimes when you're playing the teams that are around the bottom scrapping for things, those games can be a lot harder. And he knows Burnley are probably going to sit back, and the onus is going to be on City to go and bait them down. And sometimes it can be difficult when teams are really interested in going forward too much. So if I'm Chris Wood, or you know, if I'm Ashley Barnes, I fancy any of those kind of centre-back Man City. So just put the ball in the channel. They will do what Man United did, but they'll do it better. Mm. United were just punting the ball forward at times, but they'll do it more measured. They'll stick it in the channels. The front two will work hard. They'll bully defenders. And they can be a really difficult team to play against, set pieces as well. So it won't be as easy as maybe what everyone thinks, I don't think.
Yeah, I want to get to Manchester United in a minute, but on Burnley, of course, you were covering them against Chelsea on Monday, Gabs, and Ashley Barnes, again, for me, you mentioned him there. I thought it was a brilliant virtuoso performance. Gets on the end of a kind of cross across the area for the second goal as well, and he's bullying defenders. He gets in behind, he works the channels, he holds the ball up. It almost feels to me like he'd be a brilliant solo striker on his own. The amount of teams that are desperate for one striker to lead a front three, and he's playing him in a front two. Nothing wrong with him and Chris Wood, but Ashley Barnes, for me, is one of the better of the number nines, currently working in the Premier League. What that says for the other number nines, I don't know, but I really like him.
Yeah, they can work very well together, which they've shown, but I think they both have the ability probably to play up top on their own. As you see, most teams do play that way. Now Burnley are a bit of a throwback, really, playing with two strikers, a basic kind of 4-4-2. But they do work really well together, and they can all do a little bit of everything. You know, they can run. They're physical. They're throwback strikers, really. And a lot of modern-day defenders now, they don't have to do a lot of defending. They don't come up against big physical strikers anymore. They don't. Most strikers now, they want to go and play in midfield and drop off. They don't really want to run in behind. And, you know, a poor defender now can look very good in the Premier League for me, because they can rely on their midfielders in front to protect them. And as I said, a lot of strikers now, they don't want to get into physical battles or run the channels and do that kind of stuff. So, but those two are kind of throwbacks, and I think that's why they get the joy that they do, because defenders just do not enjoy, kind of not used to playing against that type of striker week in, week out.
40 points now, Burnley as well. Season objective done. City could be a fun one for them on Sunday, 2:05 UK time. That one gets underway. And here's an interesting one for you. Excluding teams to have won the Premier League title themselves, Burnley have the best win ratio against reigning Premier League champions than any other side. 44% of their games against reigning
good
champions have ended
stat.
Up in points. 4 victories, 1 draw in that time. Right, let's get to United up next, because we want to focus on the team that may well be champion City, the reigning champion City, sure. But in many ways, United are the big story from Wednesday night. Absolutely atrocious. Let's do that next. Right, let's get to Manchester United. They're in action this weekend up against Chelsea at Old Trafford. 4:30 UK time. This one gets underway. But Paul Parker, we've got to talk about how poor Manchester United were, not only in their game against City in midweek, but also have been in the last 9 games. 7 defeats in the last 9. The 2 games they won, Watford and West Ham, maybe just to annoy me and Dave, I don't know, but they were massively outplayed, I thought, in both of those games. What has happened to Ole Gunnar Pardew? I mean, Solskjaer. What has happened?
What's happened, he's been given a job, and he's suddenly learnt about management, that when you go from being the kingpin of the holiday camp, it's all great fun, and all of a sudden you're given the job of managing those people, and all of a sudden you're not their best friend anymore. You have to make decisions by actually turning around and telling them, I don't think you're going to fit in my plans. Tell them the truth. And in today's players, they're not really having it. They're not thinking about the next stage. Well, okay, I'm going to make sure that people who want me next are going to see how honest I am, how much I'm a winner, and prove it and sell himself. They don't do it. They just relax now. They don't care because there's always a move. And mentioned earlier, Dan mentioned about fitness, and Ollie talked about fitness. I find that strange. I thought nothing to do with fitness at all. These players are reasonably fit. You're only fit as how much you want to run. If it's in your head, you will run all day. That's the simple thing. The biggest issue is these players don't really care. They're not bothered anymore.
Why don't they care?
Suddenly it's happened. I think it's become like a life thing now. I don't think players now have got that desire anymore as what Dan had. And what I go back further than what Danny does. But my first thought was, I want to play football. I'm going to play football. I want to. It wasn't about, I'm going to become a millionaire. That didn't come into it. I wanted to play football. I wanted to play an FA Cup. I wanted to play for my country.
This can't be true of every Man United player, though. Well, like, I look at Rashford and I don't see that from him.
Well, there's a lot of
them. We should start naming some names now. I keep hearing continually from a lot of pundits saying these players don't have the desire, but that can't be every single player in the squad. So who individually do you think is like, right, he is not putting the effort in and that's the reason they're struggling?
Well, I think you look at some of them. Once a game starts going a bit bad, you have to look at Pogba. And a lot of his side could be a little bit of maybe disrespect towards the players he's playing with, because you look at his body language and his arms and he's virtually saying, you're not good enough.
Why am I passing to Fred?
That's what he's looking at people. And that look is saying it to me. He's like virtually kissing his teeth every time he looks at some of those players. You can look at players who switched off. You look at Matic. Even in a certain way, you have to look at Lukaku. He's not bothered because he knows he's got an opportunity of another big move. You can see that from him. Tell you what, you'd look for in those kind of games. You look for your Mancunians. You've got to question Rashford, and you definitely have to look at Lingard as well. Mm. All of a sudden, this boy suddenly has come into it, and you look at him 6-7 months ago. You would have turned around and said, "Yep, you can see why he's been in the England squad." You think of him saying, "Oh, the way he works hard, he gets about. Yeah, he needs to be. We need someone like him. You need his legs and energy." You look at him now, and you think, where's the energy gone? Where has it gone? David De Gea, where was that, you know, the best goalkeeper in the Premier League gone? Look at the goals he's letting in now. Why has he suddenly switched off? Mm-hmm. You do wonder now what is happening to these individual players. Players wouldn't have done that before many moons ago, because straight away they would have thought about the people around them. I'm letting him down. I'm letting him down. More than anything, I'm letting myself down.
But never mind many moons ago. I mean, I take your points, but 6-7 weeks ago, they were doing it, weren't they? And is it? I'm really struggling to see what's changed from when Solskjaer took the job. Maybe it was just the fixtures were kind to him. The first game was against Cardiff, they smashed them, and then they had a relatively kind run of fixtures. And when it started to get a bit more difficult, they've been found out, and maybe that's affected morale. But something's changed, isn't it? Definitely. But I mean, you know, it's a real strange one.
I think you've got to look at Ollie a little bit as well, because, you know, in those early games, I looked at Man United and I thought, you know what, I can see what they're trying to do. I could see a game plan. It seemed like they were trying to press higher up the field. They looked a lot more in sync. The last few games, it's almost like watching a little bit like Mourinho. With Mourinho, you know, no one's pressing now. You saw it a bit more last night because they had to, off the back of a really bad result.
But on Sunday, it was awful, wasn't it? It was so clear to see. Yeah. You mentioned Matic, Paul, didn't you, a minute ago?
Yeah.
He was
just lack of effort.
Not pressing, not closing down Sigurdsson for that goal.
I know he's been injured or whatever,
but
come on, you know, Roy Keane alluded to it last night. Damian, for the second goal, here, he's there, but then he just doesn't go with any desire. If that was Paul, he would have been sliding across here, probably trying to block that signing shot. And if you get chopped inside, then fair enough, you know, it's great skill.
But then he's not played for 3 months.
Well, he hasn't.
He's not played under Solskjaer from the start, and all of a sudden he's in.
Well, you've got to question that as well. But I just look at him a bit tactically, and they look a bit different to what they were doing in those early games. They were going for it. They were pressing high. Martial was playing well because he was getting the ball in higher positions of the pitch. And I'm not really seeing that now. Like, I looked at them last night, United, and I didn't see no plan when they got the ball back. I saw a bit of a plan, obviously, to press when they didn't have the ball. But then once the ball was turned over, there was no composure in possession. It was very much knock it in a channel, Rashford, you get after that, or get it into, like, you just make something happen on your own. And hence, did they have a shot on target? Or one shot on target, I think it was.
Yeah.
There was no plan.
One against Everton, one against City on target.
But there looked like there was much more of a plan in those you know, when he was on that good run, I could see what they're trying to do. Now it looks like they've lost their way a little bit again, and that's down to him a little bit, I think, Ollie.
I just wonder as well, when you look at just prior to him getting a job, then the likes of Smalling, Jones and Martial, Young, all got given contracts. Yeah. And for me, that didn't make any sense because all of a sudden you're feeding the tiger again far too early. You're taking away the hunger, and all of a sudden they suddenly think they're done okay, and everyone's kind of saying why. And all of a sudden, then Ollie gets the job, and you say to yourself, did he actually make that decision? Because for me, that wasn't the right decision. When you look at it, you look at the biggest problem for Manchester United. Well, it has been for a while. It's been defensively, square pegs in round holes, and I'm talking about two people are supposed to be centre halves at the moment. Those two have been playing like square pegs. Ashley Young is a massive square peg. He's not a fullback, not in a million years. If he's a fullback, first and foremost, the fundamental of it, please defend properly, stand in the right position, and actually see what's going on around you. And then you look on the other side of his game, you think, okay, you used to be a winger. When you're getting forward areas, please deliver something. And at the moment in time, his delivery, if he worked for the post office, he'll be sacked for non-delivery because it's been absolutely shocking from him. It's just amazing how long he's been playing at right back. They've got Damian, never really given an opportunity. They signed Dalot, who they turn around and tell me when he was signed by Mourinho, he was a right back. Mm. His best games have been in right midfield. He has not been given an opportunity at right back to actually show his worth. So why is that? Why hasn't it happened? And then when is the opportunity at the weekend? What happens is he's out. Sorry, Ashley, he leaves it. Luke Shaw suspended. He leaves that Ashley Young, puts him on the bench. He puts Lindelof, who's been their best centre-half, at right back, and Dalot at left back.
Is he panicking, Solskjaer, do you think?
Well, I think the communication doesn't seem right because all of a sudden I'm seeing Carrick when Manchester United winning games, Carrick's on the front line, and then the other fella, I don't know his name's on the front line.
Kieran McKenna.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Mickey Phelan's on the front line going there, and then Ollie's going there. I thought there was too many chefs initially, but they're winning games. No one mentioned it.
Talking about Phelan, maybe technical director.
I mean, the nostalgia trip of Manchester United is phenomenal, really, isn't it? Phelan coming back, Solskjaer coming back, he keeps going back to the well of, I don't know if you know, but I scored a goal in the Nou Camp once that won the Champions League. Well, I've read that every single week.
No, he doesn't.
No, he does. He said it every single week. And then he's gone to, we used to play at Cliffs, and now we're going to do some game at Cliffs.
He loves
every single
back.
Time. It's a nostalgia trip.
Well, yeah.
And that's not the Manchester United DNA. But no, he does it every single week.
We feed into that
because he says it, so we respond off what he says.
Well, the media are obsessed with that notion of the romantic ideal of Manchester United as well. And yeah, definitely you could accuse him of having one foot in the past. He's the whole Cliff thing.
One foot, two hands, his face.
He's brought Fergie back into the fold in some respect.
And you can't tell me Fergie didn't say, go out to the press this week and dig out the fact they do fouls in their half. That was 90s playbook Fergie against Wenger all over. That was not something Solskjaer would have said without Alex Ferguson with his hand behind
being
him
briefed.
Saying, say this. Yeah. No doubt about it for me. Everything about this feels like a big 90s nostalgia trip.
It's great looking in the past, but the game's moved on from, you know, when Man United were dominating the
Absolutely.
Premier League. The Premier League now is more... You look at this Premier League start of the season now, there are four or five teams that could win it. Not one or two where we used to be. There's four or five
teams. There was only one formation in 1999 as
exactly. well. Exactly. The game has moved on a lot. You only have to look at the comparison of, you know, this young Ajax team that have got to the semi-final of UEFA Champions League and Manchester United. What was it? When did they play them in the Europa League final and beat them? 2 years ago, was it?
Yeah, not long, yeah.
2016. Look at the difference between
and
those two
teams. And that was all done without money. That was development.
Exactly. And Ajax battered them, to be fair, as well. It was a part of the best job, Mourinho, and they got the win because they had more experience. You look at them 2-3 years on, the comparison between those two teams, a team run with a DNA, a philosophy, bringing young players through, then signing one or two experienced ones to fit in with exactly what they're about. And United have spent $400 million since then.
And then Roy Keane saying he still needs a new back four.
Exactly.
And they may well do.
Incredible.
But the thing about it is,
I'm just pleased that Roy said that because I've had so many little arguments, not like ways you and Tom were arguing earlier, by the way, where me and Dan were just on the periphery of it while it was going on.
Well,
I'd
have a good bicker.
But I've been saying for ages they need a new back four. Everyone's telling me about Luke Shaw, and I'm going, no, Luke Shaw is not a fullback that you have at a top club. He is just a left back.
Do any of those defenders get into any of the other top six?
No, they don't.
Luke Shaw's another one.
Not even the keeper now.
Luke Shaw's another one with a new deal. He plays probably 10 half-decent games this season. He's in the last year of his contract. He does nothing up until that point. I think he thinks himself, you know what? The writing's on the wall here a little bit. I'm in my last year. I need to pull my finger out here. Mm. He has a good little spell first half of the season and gets himself a new four-year deal.
But that's always going to be the thing, isn't it, with Man United? We've heard a lot from United fans in recent times that it's all about the director of football. It's all about the Glazers. It's finally taken 15 years for the Glazers to mess up United totally. A lot of people still not blaming Solskjaer. Maybe that's right, maybe that's wrong, I don't know. But there are big issues there. And now they're talking about a new technical director being... Oh, Mickey Phelan. Well, seems odd. It seems odd. Listen, we've got to move on a little bit. Let's look ahead to the Chelsea game.
Just on that, right? Yep. And this is about the Chelsea game. The thing about it is, with all of those problems we've just discussed, and clearly there are big issues at Manchester United, they still got a chance of finishing in the top four. If they beat Chelsea and then the next two games are Huddersfield and Cardiff, they could somehow, miraculously, find themselves in the top four. Because all the other teams, Arsenal, Chelsea... they're stuttering as well.
Absolutely right. The table as it is right now. Chelsea sitting in fourth, 35 games played, 67 points. 3 points back. United in sixth on 64. Arsenal in between them. The filling in the don't want to be in the top four sandwich on 66. Gabs, Chelsea on Monday. Do you know what? I thought against Burnley, we mentioned it at half-time, I thought it was the best I've seen Chelsea maybe all season. I thought Hudson-Odoi on the right, Hazard on the left, energy through the centre, scoring a couple of goals. I thought they were fantastic. Defensively poor, obviously, and conceding, you know, a goal where Jeff Hendrick wasn't being closed down and couldn't defend a free kick from Burnley. Apparently didn't plan to defend free kicks from Burnley, which is bizarre. But going forward, they look great. But then second half, Conte's gone off with a problem.
Yeah.
Hudson-Odoi's gone off with a serious problem. He'll miss a while now, unfortunately. And they look ragged again.
Higuain off as well.
Higuain got taken off. Why would you bring someone in who's meant to be the finisher? That last minute chance, who do you want to fall to? Higuain. And every time he starts, 75 minutes, he gets taken off. And then Sarri gets sent off.
Yeah.
Talk to me about what happened in that game and how they recover for this one.
Well, yeah, second half, they seem to lose their way, to be fair. Obviously, the substitutions kind of affected their rhythm, I think. You know, when Kovacic comes on, he's a totally different player. I don't really know, actually, what he does. I do actually think he's a good player, but in this league, he's just not effective. You know, he doesn't assist. You know, he doesn't play those killer balls. Defensively, he's not really up to it either. So,
it's not a great review.
Yeah, so what is he then?
Well, I think if you stick him in a Real Madrid team in La Liga, he probably suits them a little bit more. But in this league, he doesn't really affect things. So I think with Loftus-Cheek coming into the team and Hudson-Odoi, he just added a different dynamic to Chelsea and made them a bit more direct. And I think that's why they've looked better in recent weeks. But obviously he went off. Higuain was absolutely fuming when he came off, because I mean his goal was a fantastic finish, and as you said,
he fired it all night, didn't he?
Yeah, he was playing well, I thought. So that was a really strange move. So some of the substitutions for me, strange. I think Burnley tactically second half were a bit better. First half they were so passive, they allowed Chelsea to play. A lot of it was down to Burnley, and they were sat off and they were playing through them.
But that was almost the same kind of print as well it was when they played West Ham. They dominated West Ham in the first half. I mean, Loftus-Cheek was beating up Declan Rice in midfield. Hudson-Odoi, Hazard scores that great goal as well and had a few dribbles. But in the second half, they crumbled as well.
It happened at Everton as well, didn't it? They battered Everton, couldn't get the first goal. Second half was totally different. They lost, I think it was 2-0. So,
is it any wonder, though, Gabs, they can't keep their focus for 90 minutes when the manager can't keep his focus for 90 minutes? Yeah. I mean, what was that breakdown at the end? What a sideshow he becomes.
Yeah, it was childish, really. You know, Burnley obviously were playing the game management stuff, players going down, tired with cramp and things like that. And
imagine Chelsea moaning about that,
teams. I know. They just lost their head, to be fair. And obviously Sarri getting sent off just rounded off a poor second half, really, a poor night. But they've dominated a lot of teams this season because they will, the way they play with possession, but they don't create probably enough chances. I feel sorry for Higuain at times as the lone man, because he's making runs, the ball doesn't come quick enough. He's having to come deep then to try and get the ball. So then he's not really in a position where you want him to finish things off. They're heavily reliant, obviously, on Hazard with his 1v1 ability. So they dominate and get around your 18-yard box a lot, but probably don't create enough chances for the possession that they have. So they find it a struggle at times when teams kind of sit in and make it difficult for them. So it was a poor result for them. Obviously, it was a big chance for them to kind of, you know, cement themselves in that top four. But obviously, nobody was able to kind of take it that weekend. So
What do we reckon this weekend then? Who's gonna are we gonna have Chelsea win, United win, draw? What's it gonna, which way is it gonna go?
Anybody want to feel that? No, I personally, no idea.
I fancy Chelsea.
Do you? Yeah. At Old Trafford?
If they've obviously got to defend better. They've got to defend a lot better than they did on Monday night against Burnley or whatever. But I don't know. I just think if Hazard's up for it, he could be the difference between the two teams.
I've got to go with Chelsea as well. Yeah. I've already done it in my predictions.
And at least they have a way of playing, though, as well. I know they could still have a decent season, finish in the top four, win the Europa League, but at least I see a framework there of what, a little bit of what they're trying to do. I look at United and I just don't.
Changes week by week.
So I fancy Chelsea.
So United have Chelsea at home, Huddersfield away, Cardiff at home in their race for the Champions League. Chelsea, of course, start at Old Trafford this weekend. They've got Watford at home to follow that on the last day of the season away to Leicester. So tough games for Chelsea. Those two teams in the race for the Champions League with Arsenal. We'll talk Arsenal a bit later. Next, though, want to talk about Liverpool, who may well beat Huddersfield by 5 or 6 on Friday, but every goal will be scored with tears in their eyes. That's next.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Right, let's talk about Liverpool in action against Huddersfield Town Friday night, 8 o'clock UK time. Newcastle and Wolves, the next two games for Liverpool as they look to finish the season with one defeat, but not champions. Paul Parker, how on earth has it got to a situation where a team is going to get over 90 points and potentially, I would say likely, not going to win the league? And how do they motivate themselves from this point? Because there will have been Liverpool players, I'm sure, you would have been in this situation. They're watching it on TV. They're wearing their Man United shirts. They're texting their mate Marcus Rashford, "Come on, score the goal for us, pal. We need you." And now it's all gone pear-shaped. City have won. How do they motivate themselves for this game and the next two games?
I think they turn up and it happens. It's got to happen. If you've got opportunity to win a league title, it's got to happen. It's what you, I'm sure everyone wants to do. You want the accolades. You want the euphoria that goes with it. You want everyone to know who you are.
But some will feel surely it's not going to happen now, right?
No, I don't believe that.
You don't think?
No, not at all. Not at all.
They've got an opportunity to win the league title here. They have to say, and this is what Klopp has been saying all along, we just need to win all our games, and if we do that, we win the league, great. If we don't and City get more points than us, then we've done all we can. And they will reflect on that loss to City in January as being the big turning point. But you can't, surely, how can you not be motivated to win the league with three games to go and you've got it in your grasp, right?
Well, I ask because Barcelona's coming up on Wednesday. I'm expecting Tottenham to rest a few players before their game on the Tuesday. So if I'm Jurgen Klopp now, I might be thinking, that's the league gone. Why don't we give Mo Salah a couple of days off?
Well, the bonus is the league hasn't gone yet, by the way, Tom. The league is still there.
Well, it has gone.
No, it hasn't.
It's gone. It's finished. It's over. Sorry, Liverpool fans. Forget about it. It's finished.
It's definitely still there, and they've got a big game to follow that. And then no player's going to say, oh, they're tired or anything like that, because it's about playing. When you play for big clubs, it's about playing in big games. Otherwise, there's no point. You want to play in the big games, and those are big games. And if you win those games, and what comes with it after, you can't match that feeling at all. After, it's impossible to match it.
Gabs, no chance of some rested players for this one? I mean, it's Huddersfield at home as well, to be fair. They can rest the entire first team and still win.
Klopp don't rest players anyway, really. Only you might juggle the midfield around.
He might bring Origi in, though, and put Firmino on the bench or something. He's done that a few times, hasn't he?
Yeah, I can't see it. That front three doesn't change too much. And as Paul said, I mean, every game's a big game now for them. And as a player, you're not tired now. You know, you're rearing to go, and you don't need motivation from Man City. All the motivation should be from Liverpool. They're not looking at anyone else. It's all about what they do in these remaining games. And as you said, Dave, if it doesn't happen, it's not going to happen, is it? But I mean, there's still a chance of winning the Champions League as well.
Were talking a few weeks ago about what would these two clubs prefer to have, and we were talking about Liverpool would prefer the Premier League and City would prefer the Champions League, and they both might win the reverse and maybe feel disappointed by it.
No.
Fans, at least, not the players.
They won't be disappointed.
I reckon if I was a Liverpool fan, I've been thinking about the league all season. They win the Champions League, and there'll be a part of me that goes, I really wanted to be English champions.
Well, they want the Champions League because they want to go even further away from Manchester United in Champions League as well.
How many would that be?
Six, yeah.
It ain't a bad consolation prize.
No,
isn't it?
It'll do, it'll certainly do.
Especially after last season.
And then you've got City, the ultimate thing of being a champion. If you go back-to-back, you're undisputed.
And that's something that not many teams have done in recent years.
No,
I think it's 10 years since United did it. Yeah.
You're right. That is the mark of a champion. That is what Manchester United used to do. That's what Mourinho's Chelsea first time round did.
Yeah.
But the thing that I would give maybe a bit of hope for Liverpool with the title race is that is there a very subtle psychological difference now that City are in control? Because they've been chasing. They've always been one game behind. They've always known about this game in hand. And now Liverpool are the ones that are behind. And when Liverpool were out in front, they got reeled in. Now City are sort of just out in front. Are they going to be the ones that think, oh, we've got it now, and then they crumble?
But they've been there before, though. That's the other side of it, I could say. They've been there before. They've won Premier League titles before. So they've got that experience in the bank. That's the one that would be coming up and people will say. But it's about finding out about individual players, how they deal with it. That's what it's about now. Mm. They can't question the team. It's about the individual players, how they deal with the situation.
100%. Because you can look at that one either way. You know, you can look at a Liverpool player now and they're just seeing City relentlessly win after win after win after win. They're playing maybe before you and then going back in front and you're behind. And it's all about handling the pressure because there's still pressure if you're a Liverpool player now, even though you're behind, because you have to of course, because you have to win your games. If Liverpool mess up now, even draw, it probably is done.
Yeah.
But this might be, in a way, quite freeing for Liverpool because they have been playing with that kind of... I mean, you saw him against Cardiff at the weekend. You've seen him quite a lot. There has been an almost cautious style from Liverpool in recent weeks and months. They weren't great against Cardiff, got the job done. I really fear for Huddersfield Town on Friday night because this might be the first time Liverpool are playing with slightly less pressure. Some might feel, I know none of you agree with me here, but some might feel, well, you know what, the pressure's totally gone from trying to win the title now. We've got a game against the worst team in the league, maybe one of the worst the Premier League has ever seen. We're at home, we're building up to the game against Barca. Nice few days rest afterwards. This might be the week we finally see Liverpool get double figures in a game. It might be a great game for them. It might be a great moment for them.
I think the biggest pressure with Liverpool comes from the fans, not the players. I think the players look fairly cool to me. And I think Jurgen Klopp's very aware of how desperate the fans kind of want this Premier League. And he said it a few weeks ago after they'd beaten Tottenham, I think, about that last minute kind of winner. And he came after the game basically saying how he was so happy with how the fans were. There wasn't any pressure. There wasn't any kind of anxiety in the stadium. Everybody stayed with the team right to the end kind of thing. And I think he's very aware of how desperate the fans are to win a Premier League and how that can maybe affect the team when they're playing and stuff, particularly at home. So I don't see Liverpool obviously not winning this game on the weekend. They should get it done fairly comfortably. But both teams have been grinding, to be fair. City haven't been at the top of their game either, I don't think. There's another gear for them to come as well, but they've just got quality, so much quality, they can play in fourth gear and win as well. So
two teams go to 90 points this weekend, yeah, till we all would say probably haven't been at their best. It's a weird league this year. Let's briefly move on to Tottenham against West Ham. It's Saturday, 12:30 UK time. Tottenham Hotspur beat Brighton on Tuesday, made hard work of it. Brighton sat in very, very deep. I'm not sure that's what West Ham are going to do. They'll probably go out there to try and win the game in that weird, reckless Pellegrini way. Keep conceding two goals every single game, which is quite bizarre to watch right now. But Tottenham Hotspur, Paul, they've got their game in the Champions League on Tuesday up against Ajax. Massive game for them. Again, same question about them as we had for Liverpool. I just wonder whether they might say Heung-min Son, take a little break here. They've got that great win against Brighton, which gives them that little cushion from Arsenal and Man United chasing in the top four. Do you think we might see a fairly weakened Spurs side? And will that open the door for West Ham?
Well, Son's quite lucky because he's not playing, is he, in that first game?
He's suspended.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd imagine he'll play. They need someone out there with that direct bit who can add that difference, because as we've seen, Llorente is not the one to call up, really, especially if a team's going to sit quite deep. But saying that, if he's playing West Ham, there's every chance he can score an hat-trick.
Mm. West Ham are incredibly open, aren't they? And
yes.
They continue to be so, and that might play into Spurs' hands.
Yeah, I mean, I was there for the... I was at the Huddersfield game and I saw them. They had to really fight there to break them down. And once they cut through them, that was virtually game over. But Brighton were resilient, as I've seen the team in a long, long while. West Ham cannot play in that fashion. Yes, the game is a big game. West Ham are desperate to go and be the first team to beat them in the stadium. It's their cup final to try and win. That's what they're looking at it. And it's up to Tottenham, a high-pressure game, with maybe a lesser team out there as well, playing the likes of maybe Eric Dier might have, needs a game maybe as well. He hasn't played for a while. So they've got certain players who need
one
games.
Fourth, Gazzaniga, these types of guys.
Yep, Fourth. Well, yeah. That will give West Ham an opportunity as well if he plays. Because I saw him play against Huddersfield and he was there handing out everything. He must have thought he was coming near Christmas or something.
it would be very West Ham to win this game, wouldn't it? It really would, to be the first team to win at the new stadium. First team to score a goal at the new stadium. You'd fancy them maybe to do that. But of those teams chasing the top four, I think Tottenham are the ones you have most confidence in definitely being in there, right?
Yeah. I think Tottenham will have one eye, obviously, on the Champions League game, so you might see some changes. But this is a big game, particularly for West Ham. I mean, I've played, obviously, in these games. Yeah. I remember the 2005-06 season, the lasagna.
You were the one serving the lasagna, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
It was you who mixed the cheese, I remember.
And obviously, we stopped Tottenham from qualifying for the Champions League, and all the players were well aware beforehand how important that game was. Tom, you'll remember, we were comfortable in the Premier League at that point. I think we finished 10th. We had an FA Cup final to look forward to. So really, there was nothing on that last game so much. But obviously, it's a big game between those two teams. The fans, the bragging rights, and players are made well aware of how important it is to beat Tottenham. So
there's a lot of bragging rights in the heartlands of Essex up for grabs this weekend.
There is.
Gabs, one final question on West Ham. I've got to ask you about their defence. We're a bit overrunning, but I've got to ask you why they're conceding two goals every single game. What's gone wrong there? Because I look at the defence and I don't see it being atrocious. I think the goalkeeper's good. They've got a very good defensive midfielder. So the back five plus the keeper, it's not the worst in the league. It's not two goals every game. So what's happened?
Well, you only have to look at Lukas Fabianski, and I think he's made more saves than any goalkeeper in the Premier League. And he has been excellent, but he shouldn't be having to make that many saves, to be honest with you. Yeah. And I look at, obviously, you know, new players coming in, Diop, Balbuena. I don't really think anybody's kind of struck up a proper kind of partnership. The fullbacks have changed all season. There's been no consistency, really, to that back four. I look at this kind of high line that Pellegrini likes to play with as well. I'm not fully sure about that. You saw that particularly start of the season. They were conceding a lot of goals from, you know, really square and playing high as a back four. You can look at the midfield in front. Is there enough legs in the midfield in front with Declan Rice, who's an outstanding player, but Nobes as well there, who is probably not getting any younger. They tend to play almost a 4-4-2 a lot of the time. They're just a bit too open, I think. Mm. And if you're going to play open and with a high that defensive line,
don't do it at Tottenham.
Well, don't do it at Tottenham, because that pitch is huge as well. So I do fear for West Ham a little bit going into this game.
But you just never know. And you mentioned, Dave Walker, about it might be West Ham stopping Arsenal. Could also be Jack Wilshere stopping Tottenham as well.
Because, of course,
he came off the bench last week and there's no one left. He's probably going to need to play. Earn his money for a week. Imagine that.
That was the worst tactical decision ever. Absolutely shocking decision. Yeah. I was sitting there and I was just shaking my head. I just could not believe he was doing that. They just got themselves back into the game, and that's when they're needed experience, someone just to pass the ball. They bring on Jack Wilshere. He ended up sitting in behind Perez, didn't he?
Yeah, he was flying forward, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was just absolutely ludicrous what they went and done. They could have ended up losing that game because of that decision to bring off Noble.
Jury's out with Pellegrini a bit still.
I think so, yeah. I think absolutely.
Yet to convince.
I definitely think he's worth a second season, but if he were to go, I don't think there'd be too many people shedding many tears for Manuel Pellegrini. Listen, we've got to move on. That's the early game on Saturday. Loads more to get through. We've got to talk about Leicester, Arsenal and Cardiff as well. Got to win this weekend. That's all next. Let's get to Leicester up against Arsenal. Sunday, 12 o'clock UK time. Weird anomalous stat for this one. The Gunners have never lost a Premier League game that kicked off at 12 o'clock. Just like that one. 15 wins
how
in that time.
15
wins and 4 draws. Okay. So it's 19. It's a decent amount. The lucky time slot for Arsenal. They do go to Leicester, who I thought were poor last week against West Ham. But in Tielemans, in Barnes, in Madison, they've always got players who can create space and create chances. Let's talk Arsenal first. Danny Gavin, let's come to you here. Against Watford, was that last Monday? Monday before, they managed to win against 10 men but didn't play particularly well. Then against Crystal Palace, they get down in a very Crystal Palace sort of way, one of your former teams. And then against Wolves, they're absolutely battered. And he changed the defence, he changed the midfield. Now Aubameyang, with that sinus problem, should be back for this weekend. He's tried a lot of things here, Emery, week after week, game after game. Where are we now with Arsenal? What on earth is going on? And what do we expect in this game?
Well, he mentioned consistency about 20 times in his post-match press conference.
Maybe he doesn't know what it means.
How about you pick a consistent down 11 then for starters? I don't know, but I mean, I'm surprised Arsenal are in with a shout for top four anyway. Start of the season, I thought they'd be nowhere near it. So I think on the whole, Emery's done a decent job with the squad that he's got. But I mean, away form has been poor this season. They just look like they've run out of steam a little bit now, probably at the crucial time. But obviously still involved with the Europa League still. So I fancy Leicester to win this one, to be honest with you. As you mentioned there, they got some fantastic players. Leicester, and on their day, I think, obviously, Brendan's still trying to find the right formula with them. But I just think Arsenal have run out of steam a little bit at the minute. And, I mean, we know about their defensive kind of issues. We've seen that all season.
Each one that comes in to replace the other is worse than the last.
Yeah.
So Mavropanos is terrible. Mustafi plays, or Koscielny has a terrible game. Socrates, and then Leno has an aberration of a game. I think the commentator called it a monster during the commentary in midweek, and he was awful.
Yeah,
you just can't predict, Paul, which Arsenal player is going to be fantastic and which one's going to commit the howler that cost them the game.
Well, if anyone's going to be fantastic, it's going to be one of their front two, because the rest of them are really not up to it. Really, when you see them, they'll keep on about their games at home. I've seen them a few times at home, and they're always just fortunate. They're just about getting by. Mm. They talk about this, Manchester United game. They were fortunate against Manchester United. As much as they'll talk about how good it is, but away from home, it's not really a debate. Leicester are going to win.
Yeah, and they certainly have the attacking powers, don't they?
They've got nothing about them. Yeah. Arsenal is away at all, nothing about them.
Speaking of nothing about them, should we talk about Cardiff? They're in action up against, they're up against Fulham on Saturday, 3 o'clock UK time. It's our international feature match. Fulham away, Palace home, Man United away, left for Cardiff this season. We mentioned on the preview show a couple of weeks ago, Gabs, that they had to beat Burnley. Didn't. They did beat Brighton, which makes it interesting once again, but I mean, they've got to go to Fulham, who all of a sudden have found some form, and they've got to get a result. How do they do it?
Yeah, probably the worst time to play Fulham. Relegated, not here in the world. Scott Parker auditioning for the job on a permanent basis, and he has got a little bit of a tune out of him. For him to keep a clean sheet was an absolute miracle. It's probably the worst time for them, Cardiff, to play him. But Cardiff have been doing all right, to be fair. Yeah. I've seen them, obviously, a bit in recent weeks, and at least it looks like there's a plan, there's an organisation about them.
They've not given up, have they?
No, well, they'll never give up. And you're a Warnock team. That's Cardiff's biggest strength, their kind of team spirit and togetherness. They will keep going right to the end. But of course, I mean, these two games now, Fulham, Palace will define what happens, really. They have to pick up 6 points, really.
They are playing better than Brighton,
they
certainly,
are. Well, I was at that game, and Brighton were horrific. and they looked nervy. The crowd were nervy. They didn't look up for the fight. They've never really been in a relegation battle, have they? Up until now, Cardiff have kind of been in and around it most of the season, and it looked that way. They looked like there was more know-how from Cardiff City. So if they can put the pressure on with a win against Fulham...
And that's the key. That's the key phrase as well, because they play before Brighton. Brighton are playing in the 5:30 kickoff at home to Newcastle. If Cardiff were to win that game at 3 o'clock, the pressure on Brighton massive, would be huge, wouldn't
it? They'd stay behind them on goal difference, though. If they go level on points, Cardiff are on minus 35 to Brighton's 22. So essentially, Brighton do have that additional kind of half point, which would keep them safe at the moment. Let's segue into Brighton. Let's talk about the game that David Walker just mentioned there. I mean, Newcastle have been playing really good in the last few weeks. Unfortunately, Almiron's injured and may well miss the Copa America as well. Sad story there. But in Ayose Perez and Solomon Rondon, have got attackers. And Brighton, I was at the game Tuesday. I was in the press conference with Chris Hughton, and he basically said, Dave, that they need to take the incentive in a game, Brighton. How on earth do a team who've not scored in seven take the incentive against anybody?
Especially against Newcastle, right, who are not going to want to take the incentive themselves. This isn't a game like against Tottenham where Brighton can just try and hold on for dear life. They're going to have to go.
It's a game to miss, really, is it? Not to watch, just to find out the result.
I mean, it's going to be tense.
Oh, we're doing this one. Don't say that.
It won't be pretty, though, will it? You know, and it's a real problem for Brighton because, like you said, they can't play on the front foot. I mean, can't score any goals. And what are they going to do?
Answer that one.
I can't pass. Check whatever you say. I mean, I look at Newcastle. I've seen Newcastle wave three times this season. What a bad decision that was to see them away, playing away three times this season. Absolutely no desire to try and score a goal.
You've got two teams here exactly like that as well.
No interest at all in scoring a goal. Yet they pull off some incredible results against a grain Newcastle. And you just say to yourself, if it's going to be a winner, it's going to be Newcastle.
They can nick a goal.
They can nick a goal. And if they do nick a goal, Brighton are not going to score a goal. It's as simple as that.
I mean, I thought it was strange against Spurs. They had Andone playing up top, who maybe could have been sent off for a couple of bookable offences. Only one got a yellow card. There was so much space in behind, and maybe it's because the vantage point we get at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is so high, but it was almost like two-thirds of the pitch was empty. And then they brought on Glenn Murray for the last 25, 20 minutes, and suddenly they couldn't get in behind anymore. And it just felt a little bit like they got the tactics wrong, and they got everything wrong. They had no ambition to nick that goal, which, you know, you put a sterling defensive performance in like that, then you want to try and nick it the last 5 minutes. And they didn't try to, Brighton.
No, I just
wonder whether the manager needs to take some responsibility here for not being bold enough in enough games. He goes... A lot of the Norwich fans that we work with here always tell me that Chris Hughton's an extremely defensive manager, and that's why they hated him in the end.
Well, I think that some of the Brighton players have alluded to that as well, have come out and said to the manager, look, we need to be a bit more cavalier, a bit more on the front foot. But that's not the kind of manager he is. I mean, last season they weren't that way, really. So how do you switch and be more on the front foot when the pressure's on you in a relegation battle? You know, it's impossible. You're probably better off being how they are at this moment in the season and just trying to ground out probably a point that will probably be enough maybe to keep them in the Premier League. They're not able to play out that way. They were trying to, like, when I was at the Cardiff game, they were trying to play football and they just looked stuck in between styles. They didn't have the players to kind of do it. They were constantly turning the ball over. I mean, when Shane Duffy's your second top goal scorer...
He went up front as well last few minutes, didn't he?
That says it all about their troubles this season in front of goal, really. So
every single player they bought in the summer as well just gone. Not one of them has worked out. Big trouble for Brighton. And by the way, it's Newcastle at home this Saturday, 5:30 UK time. Last two games, Arsenal away, and then the simple matter on the final day of Manchester City at home. They'll be hoping that Liverpool have lost by then, I'm sure. A couple of quick games I wanted to get your views on, lads. Crystal Palace, Everton, Saturday, 3 o'clock. Gabs again. Crystal Palace, fantastic away from home. Can't win a home game. All of a sudden, Everton, if they'd have shown this form a few months ago, they may well have been nipping at that top six. They've been fantastic the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, they've been much better of late. It's been a bit of a strange season for Everton. Obviously, the players that they brought in the summer, new manager and stuff, and it's been a bit hot and cold, really, but in recent weeks they've performed really well and got some decent results. As you said, there, Tom Palace, their home form, you know, we used to be kind of fortress sellers, but now they've been better on their travels. You can probably understand why they've picked up a lot of away victories the way that they kind of do set up under Roy Hodgson. But I look at this one probably as being a draw, to be honest with you.
Paul, what about this one? A replay of the FA Cup semi-final, Watford against Wolves, Saturday, 3 o'clock. Watford have won both meetings against Wolves this season. Never won three in a row against Wolves before. Wolves winless in their last five Premier League away games, but they seem to shake off the hangover of that FA Cup semi-final against Arsenal in midweek. Tough one to call this.
It is tough because Wolves, you don't know what you're getting on their day. You say to yourselves, this team should be next season competing for a top six spot because they're as good as anybody. They've got some good individual players. Collectively, they're very good as a team.
The squad's too small, though, isn't it?
It is very small, very tight. But you just wonder the additions they make, they're going to make during the summer, they're going to make the squad larger. Yeah.
But basically, what you're going to say is that Watford are going to win here, right? That's what we're getting to.
Let me get there, Dave. Let me get there. I'm just getting to the point now. I think myself, Wolves, who have let me down so many times this season, when they get something good, you think, right, you're going to go on. This one's a walk in the park. It's not.
This is all about who wants to be playing on a Thursday night and then on a Sunday.
And we do. Yeah. Bring it on.
Who wants to do that?
We'll have a Thursday in July.
Dave hasn't actually spoke to people at Watford. He's just saying to himself, Dave wants to go out on a Thursday night and watch football.
Absolutely.
Well, they'll get it by winning the FA Cup against Man City. They won't need all this league drama. 50 points now for Watford this season. Very impressive. Same for Wolves. Up to 51 in that battle for 7th. And finally, Southampton up against Bournemouth Saturday, 3 o'clock. We praised Ralph Hasenhüttl a lot in the last few weeks, and rightly so. Won 3 of their last 4 home league games. They only won that many in their previous 24 at St Mary's. Bournemouth continually, forever, going to be in that kind of 12th to 14th position. Couldn't win a game away from home previously. Now they've won their last 2 on the road, including that 5-0 against Brighton. Another one, David Walker, that it's going to be tough to call.
Very tough to call, but I mean, we'll see if Southampton can score in 7 seconds again. That was pretty impressive, wasn't it, the other day? I think
Who'd have thought Shane Long would be the saviour, by the way?
I know, I couldn't believe it. You couldn't write it. But I think Southampton will finally get the point or points in this game that just finally puts to bed any lingering doubt of relegation. They're an improved team. I think they'll beat Bournemouth.
Not hard to call this for me. Southampton win this one.
Easy peasy.
Bournemouth, just you don't know what you're going to get. Do not know what you're going to get. Beat, what was it, Brighton 5?
Then lost
to Fulham.
Crazy.
I think Southampton.
One final question before we run out of time on today's preview show. The PFA Team of the Year has been announced. A whole bunch of City and Liverpool players. But there's one outlier in there. And I think we can all get on board with the argument that it's definitely deserved and he's fantastic. Paul Pogba is in the PFA Team of the Year. Why don't players put enough effort into their votes, Paul? Did you get a vote for this? Did you vote for Pogba on your team?
Would you
put him in?
No, of course I wouldn't have done. I would have.
Why is he there? Explain it to me. Explain the player's mindset.
Maybe the PFA have looked at it as a marketing position to sell it more, to push it out there into Asia.
The Pogba app.
Yeah, maybe something like that. It doesn't make any sense for him to be there at all.
Who would you put in?
Hazard? Probably.
Is it done like just on the players, or is it done? You looking at it as a formation?
You're the one who's voted, aren't you?
Well,
why are you asking me?
I used to vote. Yeah. Anymore, I've lost touch with it all. But I mean, do you put Hazard in that midfield? Is it that why he's not in there, Hazard? Do you know what I mean?
I think they just pick the formation from who gets in it, don't they?
Pogba has his best numbers in the last 5 seasons this season.
He's been involved in 22
You can prove anything with stats, though, can't you? The numbers have been good, but then a lot of them goals have been penalties. A lot of the assists are like a pass to the right before someone whacks it in.
16 goals,
Hazard is having his best stat season ever at Chelsea, goals and assists.
Mm. Who am I to argue with professional football players? They know what it's
talking
about.
This is your job, mate.
And he's in the team.
These are professional footballers, and they've been wrong every step of the way throughout this entire program.
If you want to pick a central midfielder, that's not Pogba, like, I'm struggling to think of a decent one this season. But
I don't think he's a bad choice for it.
Capu? Decore?
But then, Decore.
Like, Neves? Moutinho?
They're not getting in, though, are they?
Milivojevic?
As you said, players vote for
over
it.
Over Pogba?
Yeah, he scored about 20 penalties as well. But players vote for it, as you said, and to be fair, you come into the dressing room in the morning, the leaflets are there on your seat. Half of the squad probably don't even fill it out. The other half get halfway through
but
it.
But also,
let's
remember, though, when that great run that they had when Solskjaer took over, Pogba was sensational.
He was on flames. Yeah.
He was brilliant in that time.
On flames? Do we speak in emojis now, do we? Is that what we do?
He was very good, yeah.
He was on flames. The familiar phrase.
A lot of players don't take it seriously, to be fair. It's just sort your mates out.
That's interesting, because we take it so seriously, don't we?
And then there's the bitterness as well that comes into it. If you don't like somebody or you think somebody's a so-and-so.
Can you vote for yourself?
I.e.
No, you can't.
Raheem Sterling, who blatantly didn't vote for Van Dijk, voted for him, and he didn't vote for
Is
Van
there
Dijk.
Any politics? Could you, like, you know, can you vote for your teammates?
No.
No.
You can't vote for your teammates
no,
either.
No.
Okay.
You can't vote for your
They're teams. All friends anyway. You see, it last any, night before the day, they all shaking
any
hands.
Any sort of campaigning from players at the end of the game? Go on, mate. Chuck us a vote, will you?
See my goal today? Vote for me. Yeah. Give him the slip. I'll fill it out for you, shall I? Going around ground by
Even
ground.
Even like Edison in goal, I'm a bit like.
Not made any saves.
Ben Foster, Fabianski, he plays with his feet for 90 minutes.
He yeah, he's even, barely he's... let a goal in, though, isn't he?
Yeah, but he hasn't made any saves. What save has he really made this year? I think a five yeah. David De Gea's yeah. made.
Neville came out after mid-game yesterday and said the same thing. He's my keeper of the year because he came out and smothered one when the ball got played in behind. And I just thought, some of the he doesn't saves, have to do anything.
Some of the saves Ben Foster has made this season. You mentioned Fabianski, he's made 180 saves this year.
He's been outstanding.
You've got to be judged on the saves you
he
make,
forfeited
haven't you?
In that game against Arsenal,
yeah,
that was
to be
gone.
Fair,
it's
yeah.
all gone.
And yeah, young, that was votes rescinded immediately.
Young Wan-Bissaka, he doesn't even make the nominees for the young player.
Yeah, that's surprising. Yeah.
And,
well, because Raheem Sterling's in it for
Trent's
some reason.
Trent's had a decent season, but I think he's been a bit inconsistent. He's got 9 assists, I think, but he's been quite inconsistent. Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah.
His form's been a bit patchy.
Wan-Bissaka's the one for me, the best. Going to be the best fullback, English fullback.
Not according to other players, though. Couldn't be bothered to vote properly. Anyway, that's us out of time for another preview show. Thanks to Paul Gabbs and to David Walker. We are back next week with, is it our last show next week? No, we've got two,
no,
right?
Two more
to go. Okay, I thought we were done because City are champions, but apparently there are more shows to do. So we'll see you next week. All right.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.